Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're going to explore a fascinating study about Ecuador.
Ecuador.
Yes, Ecuadorian adolescents with motor disabilities and their experiences in the education system.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, so like we're going to be digging into how teachers view inclusion.
Yeah.
How these students are doing psychologically and how they compare to students without disabilities.
Great. A lot to unpack there.
Yeah, definitely. So this study involved 200 students.
Oh, wow.
Half with motor disabilities, half without.
Okay.
All between 11 and 18 years old. And they also had 100 teachers involved.
Okay, got it.
So right off the bat, what really struck me was that almost a third of the teachers said they felt inclusion for students with motor disabilities was low, like really low.
Wow, that's significant.
Yeah, and it makes you think, why?
Right, what's going on there?
Exactly. So the study dug deeper. And it pinpointed three main areas where teachers saw this lack of inclusion. The school culture itself, the policies in place, and like the everyday practices.
Practical stuff.
Yeah, the day-to-day.
Yeah.
And it's important to figure out what's causing those issues.
Yeah, you have to understand the root cause to even begin to address it.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just about inclusion inside the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
The researchers also looked at how students with and without motor disabilities were integrated, like socially.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and almost a quarter of the teachers thought that this integration wasn't great.
Oh, wow.
They even said they felt kind of unprepared to teach students with diverse needs.
Oh, I see. So they're highlighting a lack of support and training as well.
Definitely. And they observed difficulties in how students from both groups interacted with each other.
Yeah, it's not just about having everyone in the same space. It's about fostering genuine connections and understanding.
Totally. Now, here's a curveball.
Oh, tell me.
Younger teachers were more likely to pick up on discriminatory behavior from peers towards the students with disabilities.
Oh, interesting. Why do you think that is?
It really makes you think, right?
It does. Could it be they are more sensitive to these things?
Maybe. Or maybe they're just more comfortable calling it out when they see it.
Possibly. Or maybe their training is just more up to date.
It makes you wonder.
Yeah, it does. I think that's something worth exploring further.
Definitely.
To see if there are lessons to be learned about how to improve awareness and sensitivity across all age groups.
Okay, so let's shift gears to the students themselves.
All right.
This study compared those with motor disabilities to those without across a bunch of psychological and social factors.
Okay.
And what's surprising is they found very few significant differences between the groups.
Really? Huh. That's not what you might expect.
I know, right? It kind of challenges our assumptions about what it means to live with a disability.
Absolutely. It suggests that these students are quite resilient and adaptable.
Yeah. But they did find differences in three key areas.
Oh.
Social withdrawal. Openly expressing their emotions. And aggression.
Interesting. So those are all kind of interconnected in a way.
Right. Like if you're withdrawing socially, you might not feel comfortable expressing your emotions. And that could lead to, I don't know, maybe some pent-up frustration.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
The students with motor disabilities actually showed lower levels of aggression.
Oh, wow. That is surprising.
Right. You'd think it would be the opposite, maybe.
Yeah, it challenges some preconceived notions, for sure.
For sure. So it seems like they might be internalizing things more, which could explain the withdrawal and difficulty expressing their emotions.
It's a really important point. It suggests that they need support in understanding and processing their emotions and in finding healthy ways to cope with the challenges they face.
Absolutely. Now let's dive into some of the differences they found based on gender and age.
All right, let's do it.
So girls with motor disabilities tended to show more self-control and social anxiety, but they also said they felt more socially supported.
Hmm. It makes you wonder if those things are connected, right? Like maybe they feel pressure to be more controlled and reserved, which leads to anxiety. But also that same behavior might make them seem more approachable and therefore more supported.
That's an interesting thought. Like maybe it's part of the societal expectations for girls in their culture.
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider. And how about the boys?
Sadly, but not unexpectedly, boys with motor disabilities were more likely to be both victims and perpetrators of bullying.
Oh, that's tough to hear. But unfortunately, it's a pattern we see in many different groups of kids.
It's heartbreaking, and it just highlights how complex bullying is and how we need a much more comprehensive approach to address it.
Absolutely. We need to understand the root causes and address them on multiple levels. It's not just about punishment. It's about shifting the entire school culture to one of empathy and respect.
And fostering positive social interactions between all students.
Right, exactly. Building those strong social and emotional skills is key.
Absolutely. Now, here's something hopeful.
I love hopeful. What is it?
As these students with motor disabilities got older,
okay,
their perseverance actually went up, and the bullying went down.
That's great news. Maybe they are learning how to advocate for themselves better as they get older.
Yeah, and maybe they're also finding their people, you know, like friends who accept them for who they are.
Absolutely. That sense of belonging and acceptance is so important, especially during adolescence.
Totally. So this next part I thought was really interesting.
Oh, tell me more.
They looked at the severity of the disability and how that played into things.
Okay. Makes sense. Every disability is experienced differently.
Exactly. And get this. Students with mild motor disabilities actually had higher anxiety and what they call somatization.
Somatization. I'm familiar with that term.
Oh, yeah. It's basically when you experience physical symptoms because of psychological stress.
Ah, I see. So like stress manifesting as headaches or stomach aches.
Exactly.
Interesting. So those with milder disabilities were experiencing more of that.
Yep. But the students with more severe disabilities, they actually reported higher self-esteem.
Huh. That's really interesting. I wonder if for those with less severe disabilities, there's more pressure to fit in.
Yeah, like they might not feel disabled enough to warrant special treatment, but also face challenges that others don't quite understand.
That makes sense. Maybe those with more severe disabilities have had to develop a stronger sense of self from the start just to navigate the world.
And build more robust coping mechanisms too, right?
Right. They might have had to advocate for themselves more forcefully as well.
Okay, last interesting tidbit on this.
Okay, lay it on me.
Whether the disability was like congenital, hereditary, or acquired.
So the cause of it.
Yeah, the cause. It didn't seem to make a difference in any of the areas they measured.
Huh. You'd think it would matter in some way.
Right. But it seems like the psychosocial stuff is more about living with the disability itself, not how you got it.
That's fascinating. It really does challenge our assumptions.
So what are your initial thoughts on all this? Like, what are some key takeaways so far?
Well, for me, I think it's a big reminder that inclusion isn't as simple as just having students with disabilities in mainstream classrooms.
Right. It's so much more than that.
It's about understanding their experiences.
Yeah.
About addressing the barriers they face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about ensuring that they have the same opportunities to succeed as any other student.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's about creating a system that actually works for them.
And making sure that teachers feel equipped to support them. Remember, they raised concerns about their preparedness to teach students with diverse needs.
You're right. That was a big point.
Yeah.
We need to make sure teachers have the training and the resources they need.
Absolutely. It's a shared responsibility to create a truly inclusive environment. And that means listening to the voices of the students themselves. They are the experts on their own experiences, after all.
Exactly. We need to center their perspectives.
And build a system that's truly responsive to their needs.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And one thing that this study didn't really address was the specific types of motor disabilities represented.
Oh, interesting point. Yeah, motor disabilities is a pretty broad category.
Right. And each specific condition, like cerebral palsy or spina bifida, probably comes with its own set of unique challenges.
Absolutely. Lumping them all together might mask some important nuances in their experiences.
Exactly. So future research should definitely delve deeper into those variations.
Agreed. There's always more to learn. And, you know, another thought I had was about the cultural context.
Ah, yeah, good point. We're talking about Ecuador, a country with its own unique cultural beliefs and values.
Right. And those beliefs likely influence how disability is perceived and experienced. It would be fascinating to compare the findings of this study to research in other cultural contexts.
Cross-cultural comparisons are always so insightful. You can start to see what's universal about the human experience and what's shaped by our specific cultural backgrounds.
Exactly. It can help us tailor interventions and support systems to different cultural contexts.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've explored the teachers' perceptions of inclusion and integration, how the students are doing psychologically, and things like the influence of gender, age, and the severity of the disability.
Yeah, a lot to digest.
But where do we go from here? What are the implications of this research for, like, educators, policymakers, families?
Great question. Well, for educators, I think this study really underscores the need for adequate training. They need the skills to effectively support students with motor disabilities, to foster positive social interactions, and to address things like bullying effectively.
We need to go beyond just the academics and create environments where these students feel safe, respected, and included.
Right. It's about creating that holistic support system. And for policymakers, this research is a call to action.
Yeah, like they need to develop and implement inclusive education policies that really work.
Policies that ensure equitable access and opportunity for all students, regardless of their abilities.
And we can't forget the families.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
They are the front line, the constant advocates for their children.
They need access to information, resources, support networks.
Yeah.
They're the ones navigating this journey day in and day out.
Couldn't agree more. It takes a village, right? It's a shared responsibility.
It really is. It's about creating a society where every single person feels valued and has the chance to thrive.
Beautifully said.
Now, before we wrap up this part of our discussion,
yeah,
I have one last thought bouncing around in my head.
I'm all ears.
It's about that finding that students with severe motor disabilities reported higher self-esteem.
Oh, yeah. That one really stuck with me, too.
It makes you think about the power of self-perception and how much it can impact someone's overall well-being.
It really does. Self-esteem is such a crucial factor in navigating life's challenges, especially for those facing adversity.
While we often focus on the external barriers that people with disabilities face, we can't forget about nurturing their internal strengths and resilience.
Absolutely. We need to empower them to embrace their strengths, celebrate their uniqueness, and advocate for their own needs.
It's not just about removing barriers. It's about fostering their inner strength and confidence.
It's about helping them see themselves as capable and valuable members of society. Mm. You know, it strikes me that although this study was about motor disability specifically, these lessons can be applied much more broadly.
Oh, you're so right. The principles of inclusion, the importance of social support, the power of self-belief, those are universal.
They apply to everyone facing challenges, regardless of their specific diagnosis or label.
So even though our deep dive took us to Ecuador to explore the experiences of these adolescents,
yeah,
the insights we're gaining have global implications. They can help us create a more inclusive and equitable world for everyone.
Beautifully said. That's a powerful message to carry with us as we move forward.
And a reminder that every single one of us has a role to play in building that more inclusive world.
Couldn't agree more. It's a collective effort. And with that, I think it's a good place to pause for now. We've covered a lot of ground today, but there's still much more to explore.
When we come back, I'm excited to discuss what concrete steps we can take to actually put these ideas into action and create real change.
Me too. I think it's time to move from reflection to action. That finding about the students with severe motor disabilities having like higher self-esteem.
Yeah.
It's really stuck with me. It's kind of surprising, right?
It is. You'd think it'd be the other way around. What do you think is going on there?
Well, maybe they've just had to develop like stronger coping mechanisms because of all the challenges they've faced, you know, just to navigate the world.
Yeah. And maybe a deeper sense of self-acceptance too.
Right. Because they've had to deal with, you know, societal perceptions and biases more directly.
Makes sense. It's like they've had to build that resilience from the ground up.
Exactly. And maybe they've also found like incredible strength and support within their families and communities.
Oh, yeah. That's so important.
So that fosters the sense of like belonging and acceptance.
Yeah.
That could contribute to higher self-esteem.
It makes you wonder, too, if maybe it's about having a clearer sense of identity.
Interesting.
Like those with more severe disabilities have had to define themselves more consciously.
Okay.
Separate from like societal expectations that might not even apply to them.
Right. They're creating their own narrative on their own terms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that can be incredibly empowering.
Absolutely. It's about owning your story.
And don't forget about the role of advocacy, too.
Oh, good point.
They probably had to advocate for themselves more throughout their lives, which can lead to, you know, greater agency.
Yeah.
And that self-efficacy.
Definitely. Knowing how to speak up for yourself and get your needs met, that's huge.
So thinking more broadly about the context here.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, how accessible is education in Ecuador for students with motor disabilities? Did they touch on that at all?
You know, the study didn't specifically focus on physical accessibility.
Okay.
But it's definitely a crucial part of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have accessible buildings, transportation, materials, then true inclusion just isn't possible. I'd love to see more research that looks at those practical things.
Yeah.
Alongside the psychological and social stuff we've been talking about.
It's all interconnected, right?
Absolutely. You can't have one without the other.
So it's not just about changing attitudes and practices.
Right.
It's also about literally removing the physical barriers.
Exactly. Creating a truly welcoming and inclusive space means addressing all those different layers.
Inclusion is definitely a journey, not a destination.
Well said. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
That requires, you know, commitment, collaboration, and a willingness to constantly learn and evolve.
It's about constantly striving to do better.
Absolutely. And it's a journey worth taking, for sure.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Because creating these inclusive environments, it doesn't just benefit people with disabilities.
Right.
It makes society better for everyone.
Absolutely. It fosters compassion, empathy, and it creates a more vibrant and enriching experience for everyone.
And it's also important to remember that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to this.
Oh, totally. What works in one place might not work somewhere else.
Exactly. We need to consider cultural differences, you know, individual needs, and the specific challenges and opportunities of each unique setting.
Flexibility and adaptability are key.
So as we wrap up,
yeah,
I want to leave our listeners with something to think about.
Oh, I love that. Okay, hit me.
What can each of us do
in
our own lives, in our own communities, to help build a more inclusive world?
Wow, that's a great question. It might seem like a huge task,
yeah,
but even small things can make a difference.
Like what?
Well, start by learning more about the experiences of people with disabilities.
Okay.
Challenge your own assumptions and biases.
Yeah.
Speak up when you see injustice or discrimination.
Uh-huh.
Support organizations that are doing good work.
Okay.
And most importantly, listen to people with disabilities.
Yes.
Let them guide you. They are the experts on their own lives.
It's about amplifying their voices. Right.
Exactly. Their voices need to be heard.
Yeah.
And their perspectives are essential.
I love that. It's a reminder that we all have a role to play.
We do. Creating a more inclusive world is a collective effort.
Okay, so as we're like wrapping up our deep dive into this study, one thing that keeps coming back to me is that finding.
Which one?
About the cause of the disability.
Yeah.
You know, like whether it was congenital or hereditary or acquired.
Oh, right. Didn't seem to matter much.
Yeah, didn't seem to affect anything they measured.
Huh. That is interesting. So it's really more about navigating a world that wasn't designed for them, not so much about how the disability came to be.
Exactly. Like it creates this shared experience. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you mean.
Regardless of like the origin story.
It really highlights the importance of, you know, creating inclusive spaces and providing support that addresses the needs arising from the disability itself.
Right.
Not getting caught up in like the specifics of the cause.
This makes me think about that idea of person first language.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like saying a student with autism instead of an autistic student.
Right, but the person first, not the disability.
Exactly. And it seems like this finding really reinforces that.
I think so too. It's about seeing the whole person, all their strengths, their talents, you know, their experiences, not just reducing them to their disability.
And avoiding those harmful stereotypes and generalizations.
Exactly. Everyone deserves to be treated with dignity and respect.
So thinking bigger picture here.
Yeah.
What gives you hope for the future of inclusive education?
You know, what really gives me hope is seeing more and more people recognizing the importance of it.
Yeah.
Challenging those systemic barriers that have kept people with disabilities marginalized for so long.
Like, it's like we're finally waking up collectively.
Right. And with that awareness comes action.
So we're seeing like improvements in technology.
Yeah.
More inclusive laws and policies.
Uh-huh. And just a growing recognition that people with disabilities have so much to offer.
Yeah, they make our communities richer and more vibrant.
Absolutely. It's about embracing diversity in all its forms.
So this research from Ecuador.
Yeah.
Just one part of this global movement.
There is. It's all connected.
Towards a more inclusive and equitable world.
I love that.
So we've covered a lot in this deep dive.
We have. It's been quite a journey.
We've explored those teacher perceptions, you know, how the students are doing. And the impact of gender, age, severity of disability.
It's a complex issue.
It is. But I hope our listeners are walking away with a better understanding.
Me too.
Of just how important inclusion is.
And how much work we still have to do.
Yeah. But also how much progress is being made.
Absolutely. And that even small actions can have a big impact.
So thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. Remember, creating a more inclusive world is a collective effort.
It's a journey we take together, and it's a journey worth taking.
Couldn't agree more. Let's all do our part, one step at a time.